Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Anthony Johnson Show, and I'm your host, of course, Anthony Johnson. I normally don't have people to call in, but if you feel the need that you want to call in and say something, you know, briefly about tonight's discussion, the call-in number is area code 563-999-3422. So thank you for tuning in to tonight's show. I'm glad to be back. I hope everybody is okay. Everybody is following the protocols that's been in place. I know that there are some states that they're back to work. You know, they've been talking about what's going on in Atlanta and individuals, you know, the companies like, hey, we're opening it back up. President is very happy that, you know, things are moving forward. But, you know, alas, we're not out of the woods with this pandemic. I think that's the problem with a lot of people in this country. And I'm not just saying the so-called leaders in the United States. I'm talking about everyday individuals like you and I who have not done our due diligence to learn more about a pandemic and what that really means. And it's interesting because, you know, I said this last week where you have a large proportion of Americans who don't know basic rudimentary American history. So knowing stuff about a pandemic that is widespread and that there is a rich and horrific history there, we should have been doing better. Because if you even go Google, you know when something is being researched on Google, you just type it in a little bit, a couple of words, and it pop up. I've been doing this for the last month, and there's not a lot of people in this country that have taken time out to know, to learn about what a pandemic is, what this is all about. And I think even if you're not going to do it for yourself as an adult, if you have children, you know they're going to ask, you know, 100 million questions, so you should be on top of that. Alas, people don't do that. So tonight, I'm going to give a sort of a brief history of plagues and pandemics, from the Black Death to COVID-19, what we're dealing with right now. So let's just jump right into it. So one of the things that I'm struck by, ladies and gentlemen, is the ease of the coronavirus, how easy it was to spread throughout the world, which is partly because of the kind of world we built. The world is not as big as we think it is. We're so connected. I know, like here in Philadelphia, we always talk about, like, you know, Philadelphia is a big city, one of the top five biggest metropolitan cities in America. But it's like it's almost like everybody knows everybody. You know, I may not know you by name, but, you know, I can go anywhere in the city and have that look like I know you from somewhere. And, you know, 7 out of 10 times, I do know them. I don't know their name, and they could be from West Philly or South Philly or, you know, different parts, Mount Airy, Chestnut Hill, different parts of the city, but we just feel small. That's how the world is. We're so interconnected now in the world that even if, you know, when your president was trying to talk about, you know, distancing the country from other countries, it's like, dude, you couldn't do it even if you wanted to. It's just we're all interconnected. The other thing that I'm struck by is the lack of preparedness. The world was totally unprepared in ways that are difficult to comprehend. And because since 1997, when we had the avian influenza, a surge of epidemiologists and virologists were saying that back then, another pandemic challenge is inevitable, part of your future. Think about that when they say it's inevitable. It's going to happen. You don't know exactly when, So when you hear someone say it's inevitable that this is where we're going to be headed to, this is the road, this is the path that we're going down, you should take, and even if you don't know what inevitability means, you know, again, Google it. Because the medical profession had this type of information. They knew that this was inevitable, that this was definitely going to happen again. And talk about getting caught flat-footed. In 2005 and 2006, in the wake of the SARS epidemic, the U.S. Congress, World Health Organization, and other companies began working on a preparedness plan. Like, how would they handle this? You know, when another epidemic came about, when another pandemic hit, how are we going to address it? Even after Anthony Fauci said to Congress that if you are living in the Caribbean, you expect a meteorologist to say a hurricane is inevitable, but couldn't say when it would hit or how powerful it would be. Virologists could tell you another epidemic was coming. Unfortunately, we didn't know how powerful or when, but it was inevitable. So even Dr. Fauci, who's being celebrated now as someone who is calm and cool and collected under pressure, you know, when he's up there speaking to the press and to the American people and quite possibly throughout the world, he was saying this back in 2014, in 2018, in 2005, 2006, 1997. So this guy's been around. He's been talking about these type of things that was going to happen. And once again, our leaders were not prepared. So by the time the Ebola struck in West Africa in 2014, the world once again wasn't ready. In 2018, the World Health Organization appointed a commission to look at global preparedness, and they produced a report in 2019 entitled A World at Risk. The report predicted that millions could die from the next pandemic. Yet there were some countries, names I'm not going to get into tonight, cut their preparedness and public health budgets. Well, I will mention one, right here in America. How do you do something like that? You know, your president felt like, oh, that was just a waste of money. These guys are just standing. I guess he thought the virologists and the scientists were just standing around, you know, standing by the, you know, by the water cooler drinking coffee all day instead of, you know, really sitting down with them and saying, okay, why is American taxpayers giving billions of dollars a year to you guys? What's this all about? Then they would have said, yeah, well, look, moron, this is, you know, you don't know what inevitable means, so we'll explain that to you. Well, if we have to do it with hand, what sock puppets, no problem. We just want you to, when you walk out of here, we want you to understand. Okay, there will be another pandemic. It is inevitable. So we're needed to come up with ways to prepare for it when it happens, because it's going to happen. Thirdly, the lack of taking science seriously is what disturbs me probably the most, ladies and gentlemen, about the onset of the coronavirus pandemic. Now, in the 21st century, the increased skepticism about science persists in many nations, which is deeply troubling. There's still people that believe that the world is flat. You know, they don't believe that science is really a thing. We shouldn't be concerning ourselves with it. You know, some people believe that the coronavirus would just up it came, and it'll just up and leave whenever it feels like it. There is no embracing the scientific community that has proven time and time again that these things happen for a reason, and that if you're not prepared to address them, you never get a complete understanding of this, and you never get a complete control of this. So the Spanish flu of 1918, which passed, this is the coronavirus of all the viruses from the past, the Spanish flu is the one that mirrors it the most, okay? That would be the 1918 influenza, or its other name, the Spanish flu. And an important factor, ironically, was the peace that followed the war, World War I, returning soldiers brought the disease to the U.S. where welcome back parties fueled fires of contagion. After a parade in Philadelphia, hundreds of thousands of people fell sick. Philadelphia was one of the first cities to experience the Spanish flu of epic proportion. Hundreds of thousands of people fell sick almost overnight. Other major cities took measures that looked exactly like what we're doing today. They wore masks, they practiced social distancing, canceled major events like church services where people congregated, concerts, things like that. Last week I talked about this briefly where I said, you know, we're still practicing behaviors that we practiced more than 100 years ago, that we practiced more than 700 years ago when I talk about the Black Death soon. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. At the same time, I'm saying because of our lack of preparedness, because of our lack of not knowing history of the pandemic, we took the old playbook, blew off the cobwebs and the dust, and said, follow this. But how long does that last, ladies and gentlemen? There was extraordinary morbidity and mortality in 1918. And yet, it didn't affect the world in a way that this coronavirus seems to be doing. And the only reason why people have said that, the view is because there are more people now in the world than it was in 1918. So, of course, the coronavirus is going to decimate more on a global scale than the influenza, the Spanish flu, because of the population. And it wasn't as congested either. That was another safety. Something that saved so many people's lives, those who ended up not dying during the Spanish flu, because they were not in congested areas. And the world had not become that congested civilization that it wasn't that way 100 years ago. So move fast forward to the latter part of the 20th century and now into the 21st century, it's a whole different ball game. So clearly there are major long-term effects on the economy, on the relationship between industrial countries and emerging markets, international supply, and links. This is why your president and, you know, unfortunately, and you hate to politicize it, but, you know, when it's being politicized by those individuals who say don't politicize it, you know, what can you do? So when you see Republican governors and your president say, go back to work, everything is fine, where everybody knows, every doctor from Nobel laureate to Scree Rock, Dr. Scree Rock on 30th and Lehigh, that's telling you and I that it is not a good idea to be going back to work at this point. Right now, we're not prepared. We're still not prepared. How can you be prepared to do something like this, to go back to work, when you can't even supply basic necessities to the first responders, the medical professionals on the ground level who are dealing directly with those of us who are sick with the coronavirus? You know, you understand? That makes no sense to me. So you're only going back because you want to save your economy, and not so much as it's going to benefit anybody other than it's a political game. It's a political football. Trump wants to be able to say, look, in the face of insurmountable odds, in the face of a pandemic, you know, the economy was still good. It was still great. And that's not what he should be focused on right now. The other pandemic that ravaged the world was the legacy of cholera. So if anybody doesn't know what cholera basically is, you have the poops. And you poop, and you poop, and you poop, and you poop 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, until you have nothing left to come out of your digestive tract except, you know, your digestive tract. And then you die. So each epidemic and each pandemic is unique. Pandemics are not interchangeable. Each is experienced by society in a different way. This is where I think the medical community, once again, has failed, because they probably looked at the Spanish flu and the coronavirus as, okay, if we did this, we'll do the same thing that we did with the coronavirus. Well, that's not going to work, because the pandemic may have strains a past pandemic, but that doesn't mean they're the same. I kind of learned that in science at Cheney State University. So that was a shout out to my alma mater. Dr. Snow, no, not from Game of Thrones, and Reverend Henry Whitehead traced a fierce epidemic of cholera back in September 1854 that would have a lasting effect on public health. A pandemic, a bacteria, a virus always has a patient zero. With the cholera, it was a baby girl who lived on 40th Street, 40th and Broad Street. This was in New York, in England. And she developed severe diarrhea on September 28th of that year, of 1854. Her mother washed her nappies. Those are called their cloth diapers. And out at a few feet from a pump. And the pump where it was drained, people used that as not only as to wash their clothes and clean their utensils, but it was also they used the water to drink. And it sent bacteria laden from the baby's feces into the water supply. 10% of that street's residents died within 2 weeks. Even in the 21st century, if you do not address cholera head on, you can die within days. So the cholera outbreak had a huge impact on the sanitary movement. That means people said, okay, drinking water must be safer, and people can't, you know, they can't be washing diapers and stuff come from the same well. That has to stop. And instituting housing regulations, they paved the roads towards the idea of the germ theory of disease. These accomplishments emerged out of this major cataclysm that was much smaller than the 1918 flu. One of the most talked about pandemics in the world, and I think it will always be, is the Black Death. The bubonic plague, 1347, 700 years ago, caused by the bacterium Yersinia pestis, is perhaps the most long-lasting and pervasive example. I talked about this briefly last week, and I spoke a few years ago with a group of people about the bubonic plague and how it affects people and where it is today. Many people, virologists have confirmed that I've talked to, that they said, you know, bubonic plague is still around. It basically went into hibernation. It's waiting for the right opportunity, the right climate, the right situation to reemerge. Once again, not being prepared. And ladies and gentlemen, I can tell you something right now. If the bubonic plague wiped out a third of Europe, okay? To put that in context, between 150 million to 200 million people died in Europe as a result of the bubonic plague. Okay. There's about 315 to 319 million Americans living in the United States. Can you imagine a bubonic plague resurfacing again? So the Yersinia pest is a gram-negative, non-motile rod-shaped bacterium. Symptoms include high fever, chills, headache, chest pain, rapid breathing, and severe shortness of breath and a cough that might bring up blood. The bubonic plague takes its name from the infected lymph nodes called buboes. Buboes are very painful, red and swollen lymph nodes that develop very quickly near the area of a flea bite. If the bite is on the leg, a bubo would probably appear in the groin. If the flea bite was on the arm, buboes might appear in the underarm or the neck. Pandemics have a long and rich history as well. So you say, well, Anthony, what is this flea stuff? We talk about congestion. In Europe during the Dark Ages, people lived in close proximity. I say they lived in close proximities with each other, with stray animals, trash-laden, rat-infested, cockroach-infested. You see a pattern? You see the pattern? So these individuals were basically, in the Dark Ages of Europe, were stacked on top of each other. So what happened was, the fleas would infect a cat, the cats, the dogs, and the rats. And because you lived in close proximity, even with rodents, when you got bit, this was one of the ways that you got sick. Now, the fleas over the years have always gotten, over the centuries, have always gotten a bad rap. But virologists and scientists basically have said now that it wasn't so much as it was the fleas as it was the rat. I mean, think about a rat and what they eat, I mean, and what they do. So the fleas played a role, but they didn't play a significant role. But we, in many parts of this country today, live in situations like that, like they were living in the Dark Ages in Europe. They live in crime-infested, vermin-infested, impoverished communities where people are stacked on top of each other. I mean, trash rolling down the street like tumbleweeds. You know, how many times have you stepped over feces? Okay? Animal or human. So, again, when virologists have said to me that it's just a matter of time for everything to be right for the bubonic plague to strike back, it will. But as I said earlier, pandemics also have a long and rich history of heightened racial fear and strife. So, for example, the Black Death was a time of extraordinary violence. In Strasbourg, on the border of France and Germany in 1349, 12,000 Jews were rounded up and taken to a Jewish cemetery and given the option to convert or be killed on the spot. Half refused and were buried alive. The Jews, even to this very day, have been accused of poisoning the wells with the bacteria. And we know that's not true. But documents show that, oh, yeah, they confess. Well, ladies and gentlemen, when they're cutting off one of your, keep cutting off your fingers and your toes, and they got you on a rack where they're stressing you till they pull you completely apart, how many of you guys would say, hey, I know I didn't do it, I'm innocent, before you lie and say, okay, I did it, just stop the pain? And even here in America and worldwide, look what's going on in China. When the news came out in the United States that African Americans were the group that had the largest cases of coronavirus, even in China, they won't allow Black people to go in restaurants and stuff in China. Well, I mean, sadly, we know what that's like, right? We have a rich and woeful history right here in America about racism. Even in my Asian brothers and sisters, you know, where people want to blame, they're Asian American, but people don't want to be around them because they say, oh, well, they're Chinese. Well, actually, he's Korean. You know, they're not Chinese. Or he's actually Japanese. But racism rears its ugly head, you know, sometimes in the worst situations. And during a pandemic, it's been happening. Now, they haven't been talking about it a lot, but it's been happening on a relatively regular basis. So as I was saying earlier, the Black Death was actually caused by people who were most infected by dogs, cats, rats, infected with the fleas, poor sanitation and people infected and living in close proximity with others who were and who were not infected. The other pandemic that we had, and a lot of people don't really talk about this much, is that the HIV, AIDS. Closer to our own time, the horrific stigmatization of the 4-H groups that emerged as high risk in the early days of the HIV-AIDS pandemic. In the language of the time, homosexuals, Haitians, hemophiliacs, and heroin addicts. Dr. Fauci, who was on the front line back then, he said, quote, I got involved with HIV a week after the first report in June 1981. I completely turned my lab around to delve into the disease that has no name. And we didn't know what we were doing. In the early years of HIV-AIDS, 30,000 to 35,000 people died a year. It was insidious then, seemingly to involve a very circumscribed demographic. Dr. Fauci compared HIV and AIDS stealth trajectory to the stunning speed of COVID-19. He said, quote, HIV-AIDS didn't instill fear for a while. It was only when we found out through antibody testing that ill patients were the tip of the iceberg. Did people realize it was turning into a global problem that would extend for decades? COVID-19, the timeline truncated into weeks. It explodes and everyone is vulnerable all over the world in real time and everyone is afraid. Everybody is afraid about this coronavirus. Everybody is afraid. But the question is, did the medical profession know about this early on, where they could have addressed it? You know, so when we start having these conversations, ladies and gentlemen, is, you know, now we know a sort of, like I said, a quick history lesson in pandemic. You know, as we battle, the question continues, remains, will we be ready next time? Because here's my thing. I believe without a shadow of a doubt we're going to get through this. No doubt about it, because the history shows it. I just did a walkthrough of the Spanish influenza, okay, the bubonic plague, the cholera outbreak, HIV AIDS, and now SARS, Ebola. And humans have been able to hurdle those things. Sadly, millions of lives were lost before we got it. But here's the thing. We don't seem to get it. Because in my opinion, I don't think we've learned. I think once they get this under control, and they will, people will be happy, people will talk about it for a while, and within 6 months' time, no one will remember it. I'm serious. People will say, oh, remember back then? But they won't say, well, what do we need to do to make sure that this doesn't happen again? What do we as you know, not the world leaders, not the leaders in America, but what do we need to do in our communities to make sure that this never happens again? We won't. It happened. It was sad it happened. People were sick. People died. But people will move on. And instead of saying, let's stop and think about this for a minute. You know, my dad used to always tell me, son, you know I sound like a broken record. He said, but if you don't know your history, you're doing to repeat it. And what he has said has come to pass. The medical community overall has failed to learn from its history of pandemics. And unfortunately, this one will be addressed. And then maybe not in our lifetime, but it'll happen again. And the question is, will we be ready? I don't think we will be ready. I think there have been too many opportunities for us to address issues like this, and we haven't. So I would say to you, listeners, is, you know, hold your elected officials accountable. Hold the medical community accountable. Demand more than ever now that everybody gets tested. Demand everybody gets tested. And make sure that everybody that works in a hospital, that works in a medical community, you know, a center, that they have the proper equipment that they need. Everybody should be demanding that. If you're going to make videos about staying in a house, make sure you make a video saying you guys need to start testing every American right now. Thank you for tuning into the show tonight. I'm going to end this with this segment of We Can Be the Outcome. The Spanish flu lasted from 1918 to 1920, killing between 20 million to 50 million people throughout the world and more than 600,000 Americans. The Black Death of Europe in 1347 wiped out between 150 million to 200 million people, and it still exists. Virologists believe that the virus is simply in remission, waiting for the right time to resurface again. Ladies and gentlemen, to put this in context, doctors estimate that it will take roughly 2 years to create a vaccine. That will happen in 2022. That was the same amount of time it took the scientists back then to create a vaccine for the Spanish flu in 1920. And by the time they did, the virus merely simply disappeared like a thief in the night, the same way it came. So much for the medical advancement. So it's a good thing that the general public continues to say to each other to stay in the house. Unfortunately, what more than 90% of the public don't know is they will be in the house roughly for the next 2 years. And what does this do to small businesses? What does this mean to millions of Americans that will be out of work? How will they get their mortgages paid and purchased? We still have a lot of work to do, ladies and gentlemen. Let's get started. Good night.